13 hours a day. Then 4 months later, September 19th is when we went 24/7. So that's why every year we have two birthdays. If you're new here and you thought, I didn't understand how that worked. Yeah, I shouldn't have had that nailed down carpet. That was kind of... Now, we're going to look at this. If you'll go ahead and pull this out right now, I want to walk you through this. If you don't have a pen, raise your hand. And you don't know if you're sitting by your spouse or a friend and they have one, then don't raise your hand. But if you don't have a pen, raise your hand, okay? Just hold it up high for a second, okay? Now, here's what I want you to do, those of you that don't have a pen. Ask the person next to you, can I use yours when you're done? For real. Because a lot of times the guy next to you has one. It's only going to take you a minute to fill this out. If they'll let you do it, then put your hand down just to make it a little easier. So if the person next to you doesn't have a pen, keep your hand up and we'll get one to you. We'll take a moment here. Again, if you don't have one, just look at the folks and say, hey, can I use your... It'll only take you a minute, 2 minutes to fill this out. And we're not going to present it for another hour. So you're going to have a chance to write some of this down during my sharing, during the video, during Alan's sharing, and then we're going to bring it forward in about an hour. So you got plenty of time just to think on this for a few minutes. Hopefully, most of you already know the times you're committed. If you don't know the times you're committed, well, you can do the math on that. That's bad. That means you're not committed to those persats. I'm going to wait one more moment. Okay, let's go through this now. We're going to, right here at the front of the yellow page, just our sacred trust. Start it with that front page. Okay, one of the critical verses, Isaiah 62. Now the Lord's speaking. I want you to watch this carefully. Because even though you've heard this verse for years, maybe you haven't caught some of the important points in it. The Lord is speaking. The Lord says, I have set watchmen. He's talking prophetically about the generation the Lord returns. In context, he's talking about the generation the Lord returns. He's talking about in the past tense because he's already done it from his point of view. I have set them. Here's the point. God is the one setting watchmen in place. Keep your hand up if you need the pen. The Lord is the one setting them in place. Watchmen are intercessors. They're the intercessors. God, all over the earth, is setting intercessors in place. Weak and broken people like us, the Lord's putting them in place. Now look what he says. They'll never hold their peace, or the other translation says, they'll never be silent. Day or night, they will never stop. He's talking about 24/7. You read it, the whole passage. He's talking about groups of people that go 24/7. He's not talking about individuals alone, because individuals can't do 24/7 alone. He's talking about groups. He's talking about prayer ministries. I'm going to set individuals in place, and I'm going to initiate prayer ministries that never stop praying, ever, night and day. Now look how long they will go. Until he establishes, until he makes Jerusalem a praise in the earth. When does Jerusalem, the city, become a praise in the earth? What does that mean? It means the whole earth is going to be a blessing and serving the city of Jerusalem. It means literally the whole earth will sing the praises of what's happening in Jerusalem. When is Jerusalem going to be a praise in the earth? Only one time, at the second coming of Christ. So here's what Isaiah is saying. I, the Lord, am going to set prayer ministries in place and individuals, and they will continue until Jesus returns. Because Jerusalem becomes a praise at the hour that Jesus returns. This is another way of saying they will continue until the second coming of Christ. Here's my point. When the Lord established night and day prayer ministries in the 1700s, The 1800s, they all quit. They didn't make it till the second coming. He's talking about ministries in the generation of the Lord's return, and he's establishing 24-hour ministries all over the earth, and it's those that specifically will continue till the second coming. So he's talking about end-time prayer ministries in context, and the Lord himself is the one setting them in place. Many of you in this room, you are set in place, you were put in Kansas City by the sovereign setting of the Lord himself. Let's look at the next verse. The sons of Zadok. Zadok was a family line in Israel. And most of Israel, when they were compromising, there was one family line. They kept charge of the sanctuary, which means they did the work that kept the sanctuary going. Now in the sanctuary, they offered the burnt offerings and the animal sacrifices, but also in the sanctuary, they maintained praise and worship day and night. In the Old Testament, the sanctuary was kept by the singers and musicians and by the gatekeepers and all the people offering the sacrifices. Here's my point. There is a special blessing God put on this family line because they kept the sanctuary. The Lord told us as a ministry, I've given you an assignment to keep a sanctuary. Anybody that joins IHOP, you must join that mandate from God to help us keep the sanctuary going. And not just by keeping the lights on. Everybody helps us keep the sanctuary by being in it and by worshiping some of the time in the sanctuary. Let's read the next sentence. We consider our prayer room commitments as sacred for two reasons. I've already said them, but I'm just going to make it real clear. And if you can't, because you're going to hand this in an hour, and you say, hey, I want to read that document and get those reasons down, this document is on the website. So if you want to look at this electronic copy because you want to like study it out a little bit longer because you're going to hand this in an hour, you can go to the website and get that. It's just on the mikebickle.org site. This is why it is sacred to us. This is why it's non-negotiable to our leadership team. Number one, God is the one setting watchmen in place. If God put us here, if he put you here, he put you here to help build the sanctuary. Even if you didn't totally get it, if he sent you here, he sent you here to help, and you're set by God. If you're set by God, he set you in this place, then the setting is sacred. So we're asking everybody, we have 84 two-hour prayer sets. Pick the ones that you are designating as the ones you will consider as sacred. We have 84. Pick the ones that you say, this one will be sacred. This is one of the two-hour sets I will consider non-negotiable. I will see this as the one or the ones I'm set on the wall by God. So you will see the Lord's setting in that two-hour set. The point being, when a friend comes by and wants to go out and do something, you say, no, this is the 2 hours that I designated, or my 12 two-hour sets, my 6 two-hour sets. These are the ones that I'm recognizing before heaven. God set me in this 2 hour set. It's sacred. I can't go out and have a social engagement right now. I can't just meet somebody cool come through town. I can after my 2 hour set, but it's holy to me. That's the revelation that we want the Lord to give all of our staff, the revelation of the sacredness of the two-hour sets that you pick. Number two, why is it sacred? Because the Lord spoke audibly and told us to do 24-hour prayer. If the Lord told us this in an audible voice way, beloved, how sacred is this to him? Sometimes it's boring, sometimes it's dull, sometimes we're sleepy, sometimes we're in a bad mood. God said, keep a 24-hour sanctuary. In essence, that's what he told us. Beloved, I don't care what mood I'm in. I don't care what I feel like. He told us to keep it. So I'm picking the sets that I am considering as the ones I'm set in the wall, and I'm going to keep them by the grace of God. And that's what we're going to commit every year in May to do as a family. Let's go down a little bit here. We consider all of our staff to be intercessory missionaries. Because there's a misunderstanding with some folks. And it's the misunderstanding of the Anna versus the intercessory missionaries. Everybody on our staff is an intercessory missionary. Only a few, I think less than 10% of our staff are Annas. The reason I say that, for 12 years I've heard people say, I'm not an Anna, therefore I don't want to do the prayer room. And I'm saying, no, if God sent you to this ministry, you are an intercessory ministry, an intercessory missionary. You are, that's your occupation. That's not all that you do, but you do a little bit of it. The Annas do it 10, 12, 14 hours a day. We're not asking anyone to do it 12, 14 hours a day. Annas do it all day, not 2 hours or 4 hours. They do it 14 hours. And there might be a few Annas. But the 90% of you are not Annas. This ministry is not built only for Annas. It's built for people that say, I'm an intercessory missionary. What does that mean? How do we define the term? Let's look at this. Because David had full-time occupational people who kept the temple. We consider an intercessory missionary, every one of our staff, it implies three things. Continue with the notes with me. It implies three things. Number one, if you're an intercessory missionary, it means you want a prayer foundation in your personal life. Not 12 hours a day like an Anna, but 2 hours a day, 4 hours a day. I mean, we have 24 hours a day. We're not calling anybody to do the majority of their day, but some of their day. So it means you have a prayer life in your personal life, a prayer foundation. Number two, an intercessory missionary, it means you are helping us to keep the sanctuary. The people that keep the sanctuary are not just the worship teams on the front. It's the people in the congregation. Together, we keep that sanctuary going. So if you're an intercessory missionary, you spend some time every day, not every day, because some days you have days off, but you spend time in the sanctuary. Now, number three, you're an intercessory missionary in this sense. We're all praying for the gospel to go forth in greater effectiveness. Maybe you don't spend too much time in intercession, but you spend a little bit of, you pick some of the intercession sets. And maybe in the intercession sets, you're not always interceding, but as the months come and go, you've done some intercession. You have helped us do the work of the kingdom in intercession. Even though you might just do a little bit of that, you are in some of those meetings. So you are an intercessory missionary because you are actually praying for the gospel to go forward. So for those three ways. Again, the Anna, those in our midst that have an Anna calling, and only you know, and you may think you do, then later you change your mind, that's fine. You can substitute any of your service hours for prayer room hours. So we have our 12 prayer room sets, and we have our 24 service hours. You can say, I want to do my service hours in the prayer room. You can do it, but here's the key. If you choose your service hours in the prayer room, it is a requirement, and you have to keep it as sacred. You can't sign up to do your service hours in the prayer room in addition to your prayer room hours and then kind of get in a funny mood one day and not do it because nobody's watching. If you choose to be an Anna and use all your service hours in the prayer room, you can do that. I don't think there are 10 people out of 1,000 who want to do that. One guy said, oh no. I said, no, trust me. We have 1,000 staff members. There's not more than 10 who want that. Don't worry about it. 990 are not Annas. Maybe 10 of us are. I said 10%. Probably it's about 1%. But we'll call it 10% just to be generous. Okay. Now, we only want you, if you're full-time, to put your 12 prayer room sets that you are picking, only the 12. We don't want your whole prayer life. I'm in the prayer room many times more than my 12. I'm working on my handouts. I'm doing my email. I'm journaling. I'm writing. I'm studying commentaries. That's my personal time. I don't put that on my sacred trust. And if I want to, I can skip those prayer times. But the 12 I put down there, I cannot skip. So we don't want to know your whole prayer life. Some of that's between you and the Lord. It's private. But the 12, we want you to designate because it is your occupation. It's more than your personal prayer life. It is part of your job. Like David had 4,000 singers. It was actually their job. Now I realize that there's a crossover because it is your job, but you are enjoying the Lord. But it's your job, and that's the 12 hours we want you to write down. I mean, the 12 prayer meetings that you're committed to if you're full-time, the ones you consider as part of your job. We don't want to know all your other ones. Now, if you're an Anna and you have more than 12, then you go to the other category, your service hours, and you put down hours over there you're going to be in the prayer room. But do that over in the service hour department. Okay, an intercessory missionary. It's a vocation. It's an occupation. Meaning, we're not trying to legislate your personal devotional life. But if you're joining this ministry, you have an occupation of an intercessory missionary, and we expect you to do your work in that. If you're full-time, it's 50 hours a week. Now, I want to say this, very important, there are a few in support roles that are not doing this right now because they can't for this reason. We began to reestablish the absolute necessity of doing this a couple years ago. It's always been a rule, but for a couple years, it kind of got away from us, and a whole lot of people were not doing it. So about 2 years ago, we raised the standard and called everybody back to it. But here's the problem. If some of our people put all their time in the prayer room right now, like the plumbers, it's bad. No, plumbers, keep plumbing. If there's an emergency, you go ahead and keep plumbing. The accountants, okay, we'll go in the prayer room now. Then the rest of you, where's my money? My bills are due. Okay, accountants, you're right. We got to give them more staff before they can make those hours work. So there's several of the service departments where they're committed to do it, but we have to give them more staff. And the reason we've agreed to that, because if they suddenly put all their hours in the prayer room, you're not going to get your paychecks. Your water won't work. Your electricity won't work. You'll be hitchhiking down here instead of taking shuttles. So we says, you know what? Let's be pragmatic about this. Every department is committed to it, but there are some right now that it's not working because we don't have more staff members for them. And so we are keeping the ideal in place, and we're greatly honoring these people because some of them say, we want to do it, but we really do have to write the checks for our staff. Those kinds of things. Okay, so you're going to mark one of these. You're going to mark full-time, part-time, student staff. Now, there's some in the support departments. You're going to mark full-time. You're going to check that box. It says 12 prayer meetings. You're going to say, you know what? Because of what I just described, I'm only doing 8. Then on the other side, only put the 8 in. We understand that. We understand, but it's people that are being approved of that because as leaders, we understand because we didn't hold the line real intense through all the years. Right now, it's going to take us a few years to catch up before 100% of our staff is doing 12 sets every week in the prayer room, all of our full time. So you could put full time, just a few of you, and you know who you are, and you may only put 8 prayer meetings on the other side. And that we understand that. So just do that with confidence and not feeling like you're a second-rate citizen. Okay, now we have the intercessory ministry team. That's the prayer room staff. Most of them don't have the ability to be full-time, but they want to be on the staff in some way. And 6 prayer meetings a week, that's aggressive. If you've got a full-time job or you're in the home as a mother and you're homeschooling your children, you go 6 prayer meetings a week. That is intense. You are invited to the monthly all-staff meeting. You don't have to come. It is optional, but you are invited to come if you're prayer room staff. Now we're opening up a new category called community intercessors. It's for the folks that say, I'm a part of this spiritual family, and I want to come. I'm committing to 2 a week. That's all I can make it, and they are community intercessors. They're part of our intercessory ministry team. Okay, let's look at the general requirements for full-time staff. General requirements. Requirement number 1, fulfill all the prayer meetings on your sacred trust. Now you're 12, you're 6, you're 8. Whatever that number is, you take it as sacred. Now, I don't care, not our leaders, we don't care what you do in the prayer room in the sense of if you're doing your work, fine. Do your email. We don't want you playing video games, that kind of stuff. And I ask you not to do the Facebook video game, so much of that stuff. We don't want you to do entertainment in there. Not entertainment. But if you're doing, really, not entertainment in the prayer room. And I want to really be serious about that. That's not what that room is about. And that, to me, is a defilement as to what that room is about, to be in there and just playing around. If you're doing your Bible study, your homework, you're preparing for your department meetings, or you're answering emails, or you're figuring things out with people like with your worship schedules, you can do some of your work in there. I would rather you go ahead and do your work. Some guy says, well, if they're working in there, why even be in there? Because you sit in that room, you're putting a bullseye on your chest. More times than not, the Lord's going to get you anyway. I just want you in the room. Put the bullseye on your chest. I tell them, you just bring your marketing work in the room, and you just work on it there on row 10. And I guarantee you, after 3 months come and go, more times than you guess, you'll put your work aside and you'll be worshiping. Not all the time, but you will be a whole lot more time than if you're down at the other part of the mission space. So do what you want to do in there besides the entertainment stuff. Do all your work, do your journaling, do your emails, and just take your chances and see if the Lord doesn't touch you more times than you guess. So general requirement number one, attend all the prayer meetings that you put on your sacred trust. Number two, honor your service hours. Number three, this is very important, that you attend, if you're full-time or part-time, the all-staff prayer meeting, the monthly one, and you attend one FCF service every single weekend. The reason I see that as part of building our church family, for sure, but we are training our staff. And here's why I care about this, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but we'll more at a staff meeting. What I'm watching happening at the 12-year mark, we have about 10 different little sub-communities developing with their own messaging. And we have comm leaders, Bible school teachers, department heads, worship teams, and we've got about 8 or 10 different sub-communities, and that's cool relationally, with their own messaging. And they're representing IHOP, speaking for us, and all the technology and all that's going out. And we have different messages going out to our students, our interns, our departments. And I am adamant about keeping this thing plumb-lined in one direction of messaging. And it is essential part of your sacred trust commitment to be at those meetings. Because I want your mind challenged with the core messaging of this house, because many of you are speaking on behalf of this movement to others under you or to others out there. And I want you speaking in line with what we're saying, the core messaging. So that's non-negotiable to me. Every department head, every worship team, you must insist the people under you are upholding the monthly and the weekly meetings there. So that's non-negotiable. Okay, now, here's a new thing. Okay, I'm out of time now, so I got to hurry up. FCF services qualify as, it used to be, we didn't count them, they count as your service hours if you want, because our service hours, when you read the fine print, is training, Bible school, conferences, events, team Bible studies, relationship building on your team, all of that is part of your service hours because you're building the community. You really are. By learning the Bible, you're actually building the community. By connecting with your worship team in a social gathering that's organized by your team, I mean that's organized by your team. I don't mean just two guys going out for coffee. That is actually building IHOP in a purposeful way. So your FCF service counts as service hours, or you say, I want my FCF to count as my prayer room hours. That's fine. On Friday night, EGS, that's two prayer rooms. That's 4 hours. That's two prayer rooms. Saturday night, FCF, that's two prayer room sets. But here's the key. If you count them as your prayer room hours, you have to come up and help in the ministry time. If it is your prayer room time, that means you're engaging with the Lord. You must come, if you're going to count them as prayer room hours, and help in the ministry time. Here's the exceptions to your commitment. Traveling, sick, I mean real sick, not the I think I'm sick today. Not that one. We've had plenty of that over the years. For real. I mean, before the Lord, you're sick. But if you're that much before the Lord, go ahead and ask him to heal you. But anyway, I think I got a headache today because I watched a movie last night. I think I'm sick. Yeah, I think I'm sick. Not that. For real. This is integrity. Emergencies, or what we are terming IHOP sanctioned events. IHOP sanctioned events is like a conference. You're coming to the conference and you're on the worship team. We ask you to come, or you're even attending it. Those are there. We have about 8 or 10 categories of IHOP sanctioned events. Like tonight, would be, and of course, this is would be a normal FCF. It could count as your prayer room time anyway. So IHOP sanctioned events. Okay, top of page two. Now you know it all. Now you're going to fill, I mean, you got the thing. Now you're going to fill it out. So some of you are intercessory missionary staff. It is your vocation. You're either part-time or full-time. You're making three commitments by the grace of God. It's a 12-month commitment. It's a 12-month commitment. You're purposing, number one, you're purposing. We're weak and broken people. But we take our commitment seriously. But nobody, our love is real, but our love's imperfect. This is not an out to be lazy, but I'm just saying this is a sovereign, I mean a serious commitment before the Lord, but we understand we're weak. But you're purposing, you mean it for real. To keep charge of the sanctuary. Whatever prayer sets, whether it's 2, 8, 10, 12, whatever number, I purpose before God, I will keep them. Except for the emergencies, the travel, the sick, and the sanctioned events. Meaning, because a friend comes, or I'm tired, or in a bad mood, those aren't good excuses. I'm going to, before the Lord, keep them. Now, here's the thing, important. Here's a new thing. Here's what you're committing to. If you don't keep them, because you won't keep all of them, I mean, over the years, you will send an email, it's the easiest, or any way you want. You will acknowledge it to your supervisor. You will tell them just one sentence, I did not keep my sacred trust yesterday at 2 o'clock. You don't have to put a big reason. Just say, boom, you're going to acknowledge it. You're committing. If you don't keep it, you will acknowledge it. Say, who's my supervisor? It's basically your department head. If you're a department head, it's your division head. If you're a division head, Daniel Lim will tell you who. If you're on a worship team, it's your worship leader. If you're a worship leader, it's the section leader. If you're the section leader, it's Wes Martin. It's pretty, if you don't know who your supervisor is, between now and when you find out, then it's just any leader on the base that is in leadership at a higher level of authority than you are in. So if you don't know who, just put Corey Russell down there and you just send him to Corey. And so you might not know who your supervisor is right now. Again, just put a leader down until you find out who it is, and the Sacred Trust office will help you. My supervisor I'm picking is Alan. And over the years, I've kept my Sacred Trust, my 12 hours, in the high 90% range as far as I can remember in 12 years. And when I break that, I am committed, when I don't make it for any reason besides the authorized one, I will send an email to Alan Hood and say, I did not keep it. And I will do it every single time. And I want every one of you to do it every single time. Find a supervisor, and they don't have to be your technical supervisor. Alan said, this could be fun. I got some things to set in order. Anyway, we had fun of him being my supervisor. Okay. Number two, you're going to purpose to keep your commitments, your service commitments. If you're an Anna, then your service commitments are in the prayer room. So over in the service commitment department, the service department put prayer room hours for the hours that you want to be in the prayer room. I purpose to keep the staff meetings and the one service a weekend. Again, this is non-negotiable to me. And there's about 20, 30% not doing this. I'm telling our leaders, I really want them to resign their leadership role if they don't do this. I do not want leaders who are not listening to the core message regularly, developing their own direction in their own core ministry and speaking on behalf of this ministry. I don't want that to happen because that's going to create trouble in the next year or two. Okay, now important. So write your name there, signature, and write who your supervisor is. And if you don't know who it is, write a leader's name. If you can't think of one, just put Corey down. Okay. Important. Everybody, nudge the guy next to you and say, important. Okay, nudge him. Okay? Here's what it says. Look, if you don't sign this form, we're going to hand it in tonight, 90% of you. Some of you need to think on it, so you got till June 1st. So you got 3 weeks, and we have, bring it to the Sacred Trust office over by the business office, or drop it in a response box in the foyer. You will not receive your work scholarship on July 1st. This is real. This is real. I don't care who you are. If Misty doesn't sign this, if Shelly Hunley doesn't sign this, if Mike Bickle doesn't sign this, if Alan Hood doesn't sign this, there will not be, on July 1st, their money that they receive. This is real. Straight down the line, everybody, no exceptions. So nudge the guy again and say, hey, this is a real one. We are taking this serious before the Lord to build the sanctuary. We're all weak and broken, but we're going to build it together. Or if this is like, you know what? I'm not an Anna for sure. I'm not even an intercessory missionary. Then you really need to find the ministry you belong to and make your way to that ministry. And we will bless you. Not everyone's called here, but you really need to find your place of occupation in a different place. This is for intercessory missionaries by this definition. Not Anna's, but you want a prayer life, you want to build this sanctuary, and you want to help a little bit, pray for the purpose of God. That's all that it is to be an intercessory missionary. Okay, intercessory ministry team, it's self-evident. You sign that. Okay, now look at the prayer room hours. We're getting John already on the video. We're going to show another video, then Alan's coming up. On the left side, prayer room hours, there's only 12. If you're an Anna, put your other ones over under service hours. Some of you are full-time and you won't put 12 down. Maybe you'll put 6 or 8 because you're in one of those service departments and you know who you are. If you go to FCF on Saturday night, you can put 2 of them if you want. Maybe you want your FCF to be service hours instead of prayer room hours. Maybe you say, no, I want 12 prayer room hours, and I'll use my FCF on Saturday night as 2 service hours, or actually be 4 service hours. Or you say, no, I want my FCF on Saturday night as prayer room, so that's 2 prayer rooms sets. So I think it's self-evident there. Now, one of the reasons that we're doing this, it's for accountability, but that's not the biggest reason. That is a reason. We are making a confession before God. It's not a pie-in-the-sky confession. We are making a sober, concrete confession before God. We're writing it on paper. They did this sort of thing in the Bible on various occasions. We're presenting it before the Lord. We're telling the Lord, this is our confession, and it is a prophetic statement before the heavens as to how serious we are taking our mandate before God. And by the grace of God, we're going to do this every single year in May. Amen. Okay, let's have the video. Then Alan's going to come and share for just a few moments. In 1999 and 2000, the first 2 years of IHOP, I was confident that this was the little seed, this was the field, if you would, of which the promises that the Lord spoke in the early days in 83, 84, 85 would unfold in context to this young adult prayer movement of singers and musicians.
The very first person I ever heard go sing a prophetic song was Diane Bickle. And I thought, how does she do that? There's no words written down. I'll never forget that because it so impacted me that here's this woman that just loves Jesus and all she does is just make up a song on the mic out of her love for Jesus.
I remember like walking in and I remember not wanting to catch Mike's eye because if I did, he was gonna like direct me to a microphone and then I was gonna have to sing something, you know, and I was still timid and unsure of, you know, myself in that regard, but he was a proverbial coach. He still is to this day.
I remember Shelley being in, thrown into worship for the very first time, and I think you knew like 2 chords.
It was,
well, one really good, but the other
was
one
really,
you didn't know.
It was the first antiphonal set where prayer and worship were coming together.
It was. I wish I knew that it was that glorious because it didn't feel that way to me. You guys were both there in the room, so you can give your perspective. But somebody, the intercessors come up, so they prayed, and then Mike looked at me like, you know, do something. The first chorus, and this was, you know, we didn't know how to do any of this. The first chorus, I just think it's so neat, was teach us to pray, oh God. That was the first chorus, and I just came up with that little spontaneous chorus, and we repeated it, and we just sang it for, I don't know, a good amount of time. Then he went to the next intercessor. Still, I had nothing. And then at one point, he even said, okay, now, somebody had prayed, and he said, okay, now, Shelley is going to sing the response from God's heart to that prayer. And I just looked at him like, I cannot believe you just did that to me. And I just heard it. And I did it.
Mike had the ability to tell us to do anything in that moment, and we would do it.
He would, get us all on the microphones, and then he would go down each microphone, to each singer, and he would literally tell us what to sing. Because he knew that we were just so scared out of our minds to be singing that it would be maybe helpful to just at least, so he'll whisper, holy, holy, holy in your ear, and so you go, you sing holy, holy, holy. So you can imagine what it was like. And that's kind of how it started.
We developed the model in flight. We tweaked it all the time in just open forum meetings, just kind of that we called at the last minute. They would see me in the room, I would look at one of the worship leaders and I'd do one of these, and that meant we're gonna go have a meeting. And I'd go back there and there'd be talking to the worship leader. Before long, there's 10 or 20 people in the room. And we go from worship leading to how life works, to the old days with the prophetic guys, to philosophizing about the future and eschatology, we would have 2 and 3 hour meetings.
Some of the glorious times of the briefings were when I remember Mike and Alan and Deborah and different ones coming in and just setting the worship team's hearts in the right direction in terms of basically giving us the definition of success, which was we're gonna go in there and we're gonna talk to God today. And whether it's through His Word in a worship context or asking His favor on behalf of others.
Now our first main, big official section leader was Deborah Hebert. She was the first one in place to bring order to all the sections in the worship teams. And it really took shape a couple years later when Matt Candler, he got in there and was the first one for about a 5-year run. Really put the long, hard work of 4 sections, 2 and 3 leaders per section, everybody relating to worship teams in real specific individual ways. I'm so grateful to the work that Matt did.
I would say Marcus, Ron Downing, and Matt Candler, for me, have been leaders that will, after sets, pull you aside and talk with you. And they're so faithful. They're always in the prayer room, they're always leading different things, but even just in the secret place.
The times that section leading and being in leadership in the prayer room has been worth it. There are so many different aspects, but the ones that strike me are when just working so closely and consistently with dear friends, peers, many of them, worship leaders, singers, the struggles in their lives, their difficulties, and then you see when they open their mouth and they're singing a prophetic song that is in the exact opposite spirit of where they're living in their life, of what they have to face. And you just feel the pleasure of God over those individuals.
I want to go on record with saying Lisa is my favorite section leader of all time in the prayer room. Lisa felt the compassion as a worship leader, but she held the line with such excellence and such understanding of the values of why we were doing what we were doing, that she called so many of our young singers and young musicians forth in doing this for a lifetime.
Judy Dowdy is bar none one of the most amazing women of God, faithful in the prayer room.
It's true.
And
I'm just following my leaders.
No. Judy has been a pillar of strength at the heart level for numerous young people, and not just young people, peers alike. I have seen Judy more times than not. Whether I'm walking in the prayer room or praying, or whether I'm on the platform prayer leading, I can't even tell you how many times I've looked over and I've seen her either praying for someone in the room, or I look over in the side room, because we have side rooms, along the side, and I see her in the little side room, and I see her, there's someone sitting down, and Judy's going. And she is basically giving them an I love you kick in the wazoo. You're not going to believe that lie. You're going to get up and you're going to walk down to that and you're going to do this because you're called this by God. And she is this Holy Spirit's best friend in the prayer room to keep truth before our eyes.
In the early days, we had maybe 1 or 2 drummers that were good and the rest were just kind of
you know, speed up and slow down and speed up and slow down. And singers, everybody was singing. The worship team, the quality level was very sincere. We'll just leave it at sincere. But over the years, the quality of people, musicians, singers, and worship leaders that the Lord has brought into IHOP, it is stunning to me how the quality has gone up.
I remember I was on Chris Dupre's team, and one day he was like, you're going to chorus lead today. And the other singers on the mics were Julie Meyer, Joanne McFadder, and Misty Edwards. And I was like, oh, okay. I was nervous like crazy, but just people continually pushing us forward and being like, you're a singer, you're a singer. And having to step into that at some point, choosing to believe it.
Marcus was the first guy to lead from electric, the first guy to start using headphones, the first guy to start using a talkback and loops and click. All of that stuff, Marcus thought of it all.
We started doing loops and we were like, well, how can we play with loops? And so we would,
like drum loops and
we
stuff.
We would record from the computer and burn onto a CD like 45 minutes worth of a loop.
No,
and we would
only 20 minutes worth.
20 minutes, first.
Yeah. And a cycle is usually 30. So after 20, the next loop would just, it would go to the next track. And so we'd be in the middle of a chorus of a prayer and all of us